Hello, my name's Paul Greatrix, and welcome to the latest episode of My Imaginary University. And in this edition of the podcast, sector legend Mary Koenig Cook dreams up a challenger institution, which is something she wants to turn from imaginary to real. Whilst the branding might need some work, Founders University, or FU, is going to offer a distinctive prospectus for ambitious entrepreneurs, students who want to start their own companies, or indeed want to learn about funding others' startups. Mary acknowledges that it will be a tough sell, not least because of the base in Swindon, but believes the emphasis on collaboration, an agile approach to learning, and curricular co-creation will really appeal to partners, which is what learners are called here. On offer then is a very different set of business pathways, with learning happening in sprints and lots of scrums too. Admission is by pitch, combined with other screening, but the programmes would be really demanding and guaranteed to lead to positive outcomes. VCs would provide funding, and the VC would be a CEO to avoid confusion. There will be a chancellor though. There would be a strong emphasis on partner self-organisation, and the principal disciplinary sanctions would be reserved for shirkers who let their teams down. It's a bold vision then for a very different kind of challenger university, and we can certainly see clearly why Mary's ambition is to make it real rather than imaginary. I do hope you enjoy it. Right, welcome everyone to the latest edition of the most exciting podcast around, which is the oddly named My Imaginary University. And this time, it's my huge pleasure to introduce Mary Koenig Cook, who is a serial non-executive director and sector legend within higher education. Many roles she's had before, many roles she has now, but known by many of us around the sector for her huge contributions over many years. So welcome, Mary. Very much looking forward to hearing what you've come up with.
Well, I'm really excited. I think this could be more than just an imaginary university. I think I'm going to turn it into a proper business plan. It's such a good one.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait to hear. Well, so let's dive straight in. So the idea is Mary's going to create an imaginary university and give us every dimension of this exciting new proposition, which may turn out to be real. And if it does, you heard it here first. Right. So give us the big picture, Mary. What kind of institution are we looking at?
So it's definitely a challenger institution. And it is focused on, as you might not be surprised, given my interest in edtech and so on, it's focused on founders, entrepreneurs, people who want to get involved in startups, and or people who want to get involved in venture capital.
Right.
So it's creating an environment of support and learning and resources to give light to creative people and creative minds. I thought it was could be called the Founders University, but then of course it would be abbreviated to FU. That might not work too well. Maybe Tech U. I don't know. That it's in that kind of territory. The branding needs a little bit more work, but that's who it's for. It's for people who are focused on startups and creating new value in technology.
So it's a very new kind of, as you say, challenger institutions. And so is it going to be small and nimble? Is it going to be, you know, based in London or somewhere else? So what did it look like? What does it feel? How big is it?
Well, I think it could be quite big after a while, but I've got enough experience of startup higher education. So I chair the Dyson Institute, and I'm also a non-exec director at London Interdisciplinary School. And however fantastic your offer is, no doubt about it, it's tough to start a new provider from scratch. Yeah. And of course, you know, you're often up against quite conservative parents who wonder about making the investment in something that nobody's ever heard of, doesn't have a track record. And actually, I think students are quite conservative as well. So, you know, those people who sleepwalk into fantastic institutions like the University of Nottingham, it takes a lot for somebody to kind of take a bet on something that's really new. And I really understand that. Thinking about the programme, I think maybe it should be master's only, but I can't resist, with my UCAS background, I can't resist the undergraduate pull. I think it's probably in Swindon, which doesn't sound very sexy, but Swindon is a cold spot for higher education, and you know I'm incredibly committed to widening participation and making sure that people who, you know, non-traditional students have an opportunity to participate. And Swindon's very well connected. You know, it's not very far into London. It's got lots of industry around, it's got lots of companies around. So I think there's quite a good business community there. Mm. So I haven't started looking at sites in Swindon yet, but that could be the right sort of place for it.
Okay. Oh, right. That's really interesting, because as you say, it is a cold spot, Swindon, and there have been a series of attempts over the years, haven't there? And
yeah,
clearly they just haven't pitched it quite right then. You're portraying this kind of tech vision as well. So is it going to be is there going to be something distinctive about what it looks like as well? Because presumably you want it to feel really, you know, really cutting edge in terms of your buildings and your campus and such like. It's not going to be like a motorway service station, is it?
No, it's not. But also I think, offices are not what they used to be, are they? And you know, we've got a much more mobile and flexible workforce, so I'm not too worried about the actual environment. Obviously, you need some good kit and you need the right kind of spaces where people can collaborate. And obviously, there's going to be some, some big screens and computers whirring around in the background. I'm not too bothered about, having a fantastic building. But it will be very different. So it's a kind of an adaptation of Agile, the Agile manifesto. And, this would be how it works. It's values that prioritize individuals over individuals and interaction over processes and tools, valuing outcomes, in this case, learning outcomes over lots of documents. I think the students would be called partners rather than students, and collaboration would be absolutely at the core of how we expect the partners to work. So we have undergraduate partners and postgraduate partners. And, in the kind of agile frame, they would be really good at responding to change rather than necessarily following a plan. Brackets, I'm not sure how the regulators would feel about this, close brackets, we might want to come back to that. So, and then the underlying principles is that satisfying the partners is absolutely the highest priority. Changing requirements is fine. Delivering tangible outcomes frequently, learning by mistakes, built around very, very highly motivated individuals. Crucially, I think, promoting sustainable development and sustainability, and seeped in good design and technical excellence, and overall a kind of simplicity underpinning it all. I think the curriculum could be co-created with our partners, our students. No lectures, no classes. It's all done in sprints. sprints are short, you know, maybe 2 weeks at a time, but with very clear outcomes from them. And then, of course, you'd have scrum teams forming around key milestones on the program and so on. I think we'd have a lot of kit in our new university. So we'd have, you know, we'd maybe have some back end and front end developers available. You know, that there would be some sort of access to people to do some development work on tech ideas. The curriculum is, I probably haven't done a huge amount of work on that. I think it's probably a single program, but with two pathways. So you're either learning how to invest or learning how to be invested in. Uh-huh. So it's kind of a business degree, but specializing in entrepreneurship and startups or investing. And then you could have pathways and or elective sprints. So you could have pathways in ed tech, in health tech, in fintech, in green tech. And then you do a lot of stuff which you might expect in a business degree, but with through this lens of startups, finance, marketing, people and culture, pitching, AI, software as a service, licensing and legal, financing and deal structures, you know, debt versus equity and all of that. But I think you'd also have a curriculum which would include a lot of other stuff. So a bit of art and history and anthropology and ethics and politics and regulation, computational thinking. It would be quite interdisciplinary. Does that sound?
Oh, really exciting. Right. OK, let me unpack some of it, because I think this is really interesting. Right. But I get the, you know, your 2 week sprints and your kind of little blocks, as it were. And I get that. And that sounds really novel and interesting. But in terms of the overall program structure, then, is it still does it still end up being a 3 year degree, or is it actually, are they compressed degree? Are they kind of 2 year full time kind of things, you know, 50 weeks rather than the traditional 3 year pattern? And is it residential? That's the other question.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I think it probably is residential, because if you're building the whole thing on the essence of collaboration as a kind of tool to create, then you have to have people have to come together in a place regularly. By the way, I was very taken by, do you remember back in 2012 when the whole sector was going to hell in a handcart because the grade boundaries changed and, you know, the fees went up and everybody was struggling for students, and up popped Coventry University College. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I was really impressed by that. One of the things they did was that they had 6 week modules, and you could either sign up for the morning or the afternoon.
That was it. Yeah.
And it was a bit of a kind of roll on, roll off. It's probably lends itself really well to the lifelong loan entitlement, now that I think about it. But I quite like the idea of putting the curriculum in all in the morning or all in the afternoon, because these are the kind of people who are going to want to have a side hustle and be doing some other stuff, or maybe they just need a job, to kind of keep food on the table. So I quite like that idea. And I think you could still do that in 3 years, possibly two. I never really understood, you know, I always admired Buckingham University's 2 year degree. I just thought, if that had been me, I'd have wanted to do that, because why would you spend 3 years doing something when you could do it in two and just have slightly shorter holidays? But I'd have to do a bit more research into my potential recruits as to whether they need big long holidays in the summer.
Well, that's it, because it could be that they, you know, they prefer that because it enables them, as you say, to build on their side hustle. But I guess, you know, you could adapt as you went along in conversation with your partners. I mean, if they're helping co-create the curriculum, then they can help co-create the design and the structure of the program as well. And maybe one of your pathways is an accelerated one and the other one's a slightly more leisurely one, because they won't be leisurely because they'll be doing loads of other stuff. It's about opportunities to inform their activities with their other things. Let me come back to this this thing about the partners, because I think it's really interesting, because you're talking about people who are absolutely, you know, driven and enthused and excited about all those things you described around entrepreneurship, around, you know, becoming either investors or invested in. So they're a really, you know, and I think there are a lot more of them about now, obviously, than there were, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Right. So it's potentially quite a large market. But question is, how do you select? Right. Because you mentioned widening participation earlier, right? Are you going on traditional academic criteria, or are you looking for something else as your marker of entrepreneurial zeal?
Ooh, admissions, my specialist topic, Paul. Admissions would be by pitch.
Oh.
So you'd have to come and pitch either your business idea or your credentials to be an active citizen in a startup, and you might be judged kind of Dragon's Den style by scrum masters and investors. But then you would add into that, you'd obviously have to add some quite high intensity screening and assessment for team skills, for innovation, for creativity, for resilience and motivation. As for I think you'd probably have some kind of minimum educational standards, not necessarily judged by grades. There might be a different way of testing that as well. But, you know, you need people with a certain amount of competence in, for example, handling data. Yeah, so I think people do need to have some good communication and some good numeracy skills to do this course. I'm kind of more interested in people's cognitive agility and original thinking than I am in, you know, in people who've been through the sausage mill of GCSEs and A-levels. But the key would be for them to articulate their ideas in some way.
So it's sounding right. I think this is really interesting, because it's a you know, different approach to selection and admission, right? But there's you might tell me to go away, but there is a danger. It's sounding a bit like a slightly high grade apprentice / Dragon's Den operation, whereas actually you're going for something, you know, significantly different here. And you don't want the tabloids reducing it to that kind of level. So, I mean, how do you, in a sense, demonstrate the quality of the operation to prospective students, right? So it's not, it can't be just about the curriculum, can't be just about what goes on in the classroom. So are there other signifiers of quality that will mean that students are drawn to apply to you?
Yeah, so I think that needs me to circle back to how this is going to be financed, because there's no doubt about it that, you know, you could say it's quite tough to make any money out of a new university or higher education provider, unless you're kind of body shopping, you know, law and business students in the, you know, in a shop on the East End of London or something. It's quite hard to make a lot of money. And so it's not, you know, it's not a kind of easy thing to get investment in, I would say. So my financing proposal is that you would get venture capital companies to become venture partners, and you'd get, say, 20 VC funds to put up $500,000 as the startup fund. And then they would have an annual subscription, which would either finance a couple or more student partners, or they'd pay, let's say, $50,000 a year. And what that gives them is access to graduates, access to startups and deal flow, mentoring, and also a kind of, you know, a real foothold in what the curriculum is. Because, of course, venture capital, I mean, not only they need really great people to be their colleagues in picking good investments, but they also need really good startups to, you know, to come through the door looking for finance. So there should be a real kind of interest in that. And I think having them as part of the kind of ecosystem of quality in this is really important, because, you know, they've seen it all before. They've seen what kind of companies, what kind of people succeed and fail. They know what a good deal and a good pitch and a good business plan and a good setup looks like. So I think they could be really crucial to making sure that this is a very high quality offer. I had a look at the subject benchmarks. Of course, there isn't a subject benchmark for anything quite that fits this. But you know, some of the ideas in the computer science and the business subject benchmarks, I think would work absolutely fine. By the way, this isn't just, you know, kindergarten. You know, come and have some fun for a couple of years. This is really demanding stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, people are going to have to come out of this, you know, learning how to do this stuff really, really properly. And yeah, they've got to develop some very grown up skills, actually. You know, imagine, you know, a 21, 22 year old graduate pitching for money for a startup, you know, when they've just kind of done it after a normal degree, compared to somebody who's actually learned how this whole system works, you know, knows how to pitch properly, knows how to prepare properly, knows how to really plan a business for success. And of course, some of the student partners would not be the founders, not be the chief execs of the startups. They'd be people who want to do marketing in a startup, who want to do finance in a startup, who want to do HR in a startup. So you've got lots of ways, you know, you're also creating a community of people who are well attuned to what it means to work in a very young company.
I think that you've made that sound really exciting, right? And I do think there's a lot to what you articulate. And, you know, one of the things you're going to be judged on quite early is the you know, the caliber of your output, and also what they go on and do. And, you know, and I think, you know, you'll be hoping that they all go on into those different kinds of roles that you describe. And some of them will actually, you know, start their own very successful startup. Others will, you know, will join the big finance companies as well. So there's lots of and you will hope to get that, you know, really top draw graduate outcomes result, which I think will then help build and burnish the reputation. So I think that all sounds really, really exciting and really positive for those who want to join the organization. And that would help you get off to a flying start. What about, let me ask you about this then. So is it a university that is, you know, frankly, pretty much only concerned with education then, or are you doing research? Because it would sound like you actually much more interested potentially in knowledge exchange rather than kind of blue skies research.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I think research in this area is potentially very interesting. I think probably not straight away, because you've got to get some students in and some teaching and learning and some graduates out. That's your kind of first step on the block. But I can't imagine this community of student partners, graduate partners, venture capitalists and experts in the university. I can't imagine them not creating quite a lot of new knowledge on this venture, and therefore wanting to turn that into more formal research and research output. But I'd see that as being maybe 5 or 6 years down the line.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. And you mentioned, I was smiling to myself because you obviously talked about VC in the context of venture capitalists, but obviously there's another VC, which is commonplace in cities. So would the vice chancellor be you? Would you call it a different person, a different title to avoid this VC confusion?
Yeah, that you're so right about that. When I'm doing my EdTech group, VC, when I'm in my EdTech world, VC can mean those two things and it can get very confusing. So I think it's probably going to be a chief exec rather than a vice chancellor. Yeah. I'd quite like to do it for a bit, although getting back into an executive role has been off my agenda for quite a long time now, so it might not be me. But I'd imagine it'd be quite hands-off, kind of dealing with admin, regulation, etc., but also critically stakeholder investor relationships and ensuring a superb student partner experience. When I first left UCAS, I harboured a fantasy about starting a university, and it was going to be called the University for Students, and I didn't really flesh it out very much, but underpinning it was the idea actually as students as customers, and students as partners in the education experience. So that this would be a good opportunity for me to take some of those thoughts and carry them through as well.
But fantastic. And I'm glad to have been the vehicle for you finally to articulate this publicly. But can we go back to this students as partners thing again? Because I think that's a really interesting, actually calling them partners rather than students. So it's not even students as partners, is they are partners, right? So that's really interesting. So talk us through how would you in this university then kind of underpin the partner experience, as I guess we've got to call it?
That's a really good question. I am imagining that it's quite small. So, I'd imagine the first cohorts wouldn't be more than, 20 or 30, 40 student partners to start with. But this comes from, I did this, the UPP Foundation Student Futures Commission work a year or 18 months ago. And, one of the kind of strongest themes that I got out of all that work that we did was the idea of co-creation, co-production with students, and how empowering and powerful that was for students. And it came out of during the pandemic that students and student unions were kind of suddenly in the room with leadership teams making decisions rather than being kind of consulted on them afterwards. And I've noticed, and it's probably nothing to do with the work that we did on the Student Futures Commission, but I have noticed that this whole idea of co-creation and co-production with students is, it's something that you hear around the sector a lot now. It's kind of still echoing around. So I do feel very strongly about that. These are adults after all. And rather than kind of, dishing up the medicine and hoping they take the prescription, to get them much, much more involved in what it is they think they want. Now, of course, some young people, and by the way, this is not exclusively for young people, but some don't really know what they want and they don't know what good looks like. And that's probably why a lot of young people move around jobs very quickly in the early part of their career, because they go into one job and one employer and then suddenly they think, oh, I'm not sure I really like this. So what you're trying to do is to give them some agency in their learning, in the environment, in how things work, but also lots of guidance and lots of mentoring and actually leadership. That's the role of the organization that this university is to provide leadership for these student partners, and, you know, allow them to become part of their own destiny.
So will they also then define the experience outside the classroom, as it were, right? So, you know, again, you know, you could imagine a whole series of, you know, traditional student unions, societies, clubs, facilities, all that kind of typical stuff. But you could also imagine this, you know, group of, you know, pioneering student partners not wanting any of that, right? Actually wanting something very, very different. And I don't know what that meant. So would there be space, freedom for them to define and articulate this very differently?
Yeah, and I think if the whole kind of agile manifesto and principles work translated into this particular organization, then you'd very quickly get And you'd encourage them to self-organize into teams. You know, if they want to go and do sport, people self-organize. It's been very instructive, actually, looking at what's happened with the other startup organizations I'm involved with, Dyson and London Interdisciplinary. And, you know, even though these tend to be, you know, quite courageous people who've taken the road less traveled in making their choices, I found they can quickly revert to being quite traditional, you know, and they quite like, you know, lots of terms of reference and all this sort of stuff. But I think if we're teaching the kind of agile way of working, which translates, is not just for software development, obviously, but it translates into all sorts of other things, I think they will self-organize and set up to do the things that they need to do, but with leadership, with coaching from the organization itself,
and presumably a bit of resource to enable it to happen.
Definitely.
So I think that's quite exciting though. But I completely imagine how people would look at everything around and say, we've got to just do it the way everyone else does it, and you're trying to encourage the very opposite. So are there any other, I mean, it's a really distinctive kind of institution, this, right? I whatever it ends up being called, all right? And even if it is in Swindon, right? It is apologies to anyone living in Swindon, but it is a really distinctive kind of institution. So I think you've drawn it very carefully, and it's really exciting. But are there any other distinctive features that we should know about? You know, I mean, are you appointing Branson as a chancellor? I mean, how is it, you know, are there any other things that you anticipate being part of the fabric of the organization?
I think a chancellor as a figurehead is a great idea. And I think my go-to choice would probably be Martha Lane Fox rather than Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she's already taken by the OU, I think.
Of course, But people do more than once.
But I think she'd be brilliant because she's absolutely been part of this kind of world herself. You know, she's very tech savvy. She's in the House of Lords. She's connected to, you know, all the best people. And I just think that she's an incredible role model. You know, one of the things, by the way, that I would be very keen to do is to make sure that I have a pretty much equal male-female split.
Right.
In the students, so rather than just take the, you know, the top 20 best applicants, I'd probably take the top 10 best male applicants and the top 10 best female applicants, because this particular area, tech and finance, you know, venture capital and so on, is quite male dominated. So I'd quite like to have some powerful female role models lolling around the place.
Apart from yourself,
I guess I would be a role model, hopefully, as well.
Excellent. And again, given it's an imaginary universe, at least for the moment.
At the moment,
you are allowed to ban stuff, right? And I appreciate, you know, there's all sorts of controversy about banning speakers, etc. But you know, you're in a privileged position. Is there anything that you simply would not allow to happen or to exist within your university?
Well, I mean, there's a few absolute hygiene factors around safeguarding discriminatory behaviour, etc. And you'd absolutely have those fundamental standards of zero tolerance of, you know, any of that kind of stuff. I think probably in this environment, you know, the greatest sin would be not pulling your weight, not helping others to succeed, not being part of the team, not being engaged. I think those would be the deadly sins.
So you're disciplined shirkers is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just not, you know, if you're not pulling your weight, and this is this, you know, don't forget, collaboration is the kind of underpinning concept here, that people have to work together, you know, and that's the whole idea of Scrum and sprints and so on. That's how the Agile principles work. It is about team, and it's about collaboration. So I think, being a shirker would be pretty terrible. I think they'd get disciplinary out for that.
Excellent.
And you know, they'd feel probably a bit more like employees. So it would be, you know, you'd be doing kind of regular reviews and performance reviews and coaching people to be more successful. And after all, everybody has a bad day and a bad week. So, you know, if you didn't help your colleagues to get back up to speed, that would be a pretty bad sin as well.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. we need more of this. And then finally, I mean, this is an absolutely essential element. You need a song, right? You need a tune. What's the anthem of Founders University / Tech University?
This is such an annoying question, because when I was thinking of the tracks that I like, I thought, oh, I better go and check the lyrics, you know, and then you find that the lyrics make them unsuitable, not just because they're about love or whatever, but because, you know, they've got the wrong words in them or they're just not quite right. But anyway, I took my inspiration from a visit I did last week to Manchester Metropolitan University, where they were launching their Student Futures Manifesto. And the students there just put on this fantastic performance poetry about belonging, and then they got up and did a tune, and it was I Can See Clearly Now by Jimmy Cliff. And I thought, actually, that is perfect, because it's kind of, I think the vibe is right for this particular new university. But also, some of the other things I might have picked if the lyrics hadn't been a bit unsuitable, you know, they hadn't got a kind of catchy sing-along, but, you know, it's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. You know, that's, you could say that 5 times a day when something was going well, couldn't you? I think that's kind of got, and it's I think it's a song that everyone knows, whatever their generation. So might not be very cool, but I thought it was a good one.
I think it's a classic that you know, will resonate with lots of applicants, so partners and supporters and sponsors of the organisation. That's fantastic, Mary. Listen, thank you ever so much for sharing your ideas for what may yet become reality, your current imaginary university. It's been a huge pleasure. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Well, thank you for making me think about it, because I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Paul.
I do hope you enjoyed this edition of My Imaginary University. There should be more episodes along soon. In the meantime, you might like to listen to the equally higher education focused podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I talk to senior university leaders, most of them registrars or equivalent, about their careers and various bits of HE stuff. Just Google it to find many interesting episodes to listen to.